all for coming. Some of you have spent the day with us. I'm sorry for that. But we appreciate you being here. My name is Scott Erickson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Just some quick housekeeping items. Restrooms are out these doors to the left, towards the sliding doors to the left. They're kind of behind us. So if anybody gets lost, that's where they're at. I'm going to read a few things just for housekeeping, make sure everybody's on the same page, understand what we're doing here today. The administrative rules process is a public process. Because this is a public meeting, it is being recorded. Today's meeting is held solely to receive commentary on the rules the department will be drafting to implement the Medical Cannabis Policy Act, the Cannabis Cultivation Amendments, the Cannabidiol Product Act, and the Cultivation of Industrial Hemp Act. There are three meetings today. The first one was this morning from 8:30 to 10 to discuss industrial hemp. The second was from 11 to 12:30 to discuss CBD and cannabidiol products. And this meeting begins a few minutes late at 1:30 to focus on medical marijuana and the right to try for terminally ill patients as set forth in HB 195. This is not a forum to provide commentary on the bills that were passed by the legislature and what should or shouldn't have been included in the legislation. We recognize that HB 195 is more limited in scope than some people wanted it to be. We're not in a position to change that here. Our role with the department is to put rules into place to implement those bills that were passed. So comments regarding the scope should be directed at your legislator. The department does not have the authority to create rules that do any more than are specified in statute. So we'll go through some introductions so you know who's up here. Weston, will you start?
I'm Weston Judd. I'm the state chemist with the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food.
I'm Robert Hogart. I'm the director of plant industry and conservation with the Utah Department.
I'm Melissa
York, Senior Policy Analyst for the Department. Nicole Canna from the Attorney General's Office is the Attorney General and Counsel for the Department of Agriculture.
So this meeting is being held to take public input on the rules the department will be writing to implement these bills that were passed by the legislature. We anticipate just talking about medical marijuana for the next hour and a half to 2 hours. There are approximately 15 people who signed up previously to be able to speak today. We'll start with those individuals that will be allowed to speak for 5 minutes. If there's time left at the end, then we'll allow other people to speak. There should be plenty of time. By raise of hands, who else would like to speak that hasn't signed up? Okay, and there may be more after we get going. The most helpful pieces of information for you to provide today are aspects that you either want included in the administrative rules or pieces of, or things that you don't want included. What we're trying to do is take input before we even start drafting so that we don't have to go through the this multiple times to get it right. The other aspect you should understand is the panel from the Department of Agriculture and Food that is up here. We aren't going to be commenting on policy issues, but may ask for clarifying questions. If you would like to submit additional information to us, please email us. Let me give you an email address. Email address is agriculture@utah.gov. Put in the subject line medical marijuana, industrial hemp, CBD, we'll get it and put it there. As we go through this process of rulemaking, we have to respond to people that make comments on the rules. And so you'll be apprised of the process, you'll know where we're at in the language. excuse me, this is only the first part of the public process that we're going through. After language is drafted, there will be specific public comments on the drafted language that you'll be able to come and talk to the department or provide written comments on that specific language. We anticipate having at least two public comment periods for each of the rules that come out, one in the Salt Lake area and one somewhere else in the state, so it's not just available to people here. Also, please be respectful of others in attendance today, any individual engaging in offensive language or gestures, inappropriate or threatening behavior, or who fails to yield their speaking time. time or attempts to interrupt another person's speaking time may be asked to leave the meeting. Further, although counsel for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food is present, this meeting is not intended to provide legal advice regarding the newly enacted legislation. The presence of the Attorney General's Office, the Department of Agriculture and Food, or any state entity present here today should not be considered an endorsement of any policy or position stated by any member of this panel or by an individual in attendance. There is no attorney-client relationship between Ms. Hanna and any person appearing in this public meeting. No statements by her or any other member of the panel should be taken as legal advice or counsel or a statement of the official position of the Attorney General's Office, nor should it substitute for obtaining competent legal advice from a licensed attorney. Notwithstanding the above, please be reminded that under federal law, possessing, using, distributing, and or selling marijuana is a federal crime. Nothing in this meeting is intended to provide any guidance or assistance in violating federal law or to provide guidance or assistance in complying with federal law. Similarly, compliance with state law does not confer immunity from enforcement of federal law or federal enforcement practices. Please also note that we are not advising you regarding federal, state, or local tax or any regulatory consequences of engaging in any business in this industry. To make sure that everybody who wishes to speak will get an opportunity, I'll go through the list who we have, and we'll just ask you to come to one podium and then the other so we can keep moving through this and make sure everybody gets an opportunity. So on my list that we have, Daniela Lucero. She was here earlier, I just see her. Okay. Brian Parker. Okay. Leslie Stubbs. Let's strike it out. Leroy Pendleton. Diane Bingham. Christine Sandlis. Christine's here. So Christine, come up to this side. Rebecca Child. Stan Kippen. Okay, so you'll come over here after she's finished. And then Fraser McFarland.
They're right here.
Okay, so you'll come after Christine's finished.
Good afternoon. I did want to make a comment and concern for the patient's organization. In the language of this bill, I wanted to find out what we're going to be doing with rules. It distinguishes that there's going to be one dispensary, and that the cost of transporting that medication to a patient is going to fall onto the patient. And my concern is this. If we have a dispensary in Salt Lake County, I have a patient in Blanding who's suffering. That cost to have that transported to that patient is concerning to us. We know that it can't be mailed, so we're talking about a carrier service. So I would like to see what kind of rules we're going to be having in place for that. I'm also still concerned about this bill being completely run by the ag, and we're not going to have a free market. I don't know how we're going to be setting up rules for that, but I would like to engage with you guys a little further on that. But the biggest concern is the one dispensary in the state. That's going to be problematic. So
I'll
discuss that with you guys further. Thank you.
Good afternoon, folks. This is exciting to me. This is Utah's first challenge for a long time to help patients with cannabis. I prefer to call it cannabis because marijuana is more or less a racial slang name for cannabis, and it's just inappropriate sometimes. It was taken away from us a long time ago under federal regulations. Utah is one of the first states to take it away. And I think what they didn't know is they didn't have studies back then. They're required to have all of these studies on marijuana, cannabis, but they're not, they really don't know what they're studying. If you haven't used it, you don't know what it does. If you haven't grown it, you don't know how it grows. The state of Utah has put it on you guys' shoulders to grow patients who have been tossed out. They're at their last hurrah, and all they have is marijuana, cannabis, to live on, to help them see the light, to feel better, to enlighten them that life isn't that bad. Some of these opiates that they've taken and stuff are killing people. They don't know when they've had too much. They have a bear with it or something, and they pass out and die. Marijuana, cannabis has never done this. Has never killed a person. Okay? I don't know how many times you guys have looked this up on the internet. I don't know if you're afraid to search the word, but I've researched it day in and day out for years, and I've seen its progress. You can't believe how well people do with it. They've come up with all kinds of solutions to help all kinds of problems, anxieties, eating disorders. It can help cure and repair the myelin sheath on patients that have MS. And they're doing this. They have studies that the U.S. has paid for in Israel that confirms these things. It is confirmed cannabis helps and can cure. But you have to give them the right strain. You have to give them what they want. I'm here to propose that Utah needs to give the patients that are dying the very best. And what I have learned is organic growing of cannabis is the very best way to grow it. It does not have side effects. It does not have hidden. You can't use pesticides on this stuff. You have to have a facility that keeps the bugs out so it doesn't get invaded by bugs. It has to be regulated, the temperature and the humidity, so it doesn't rot. These people are depending on this. This is their last hurrah. They only have 6 months to live. Okay? They can live longer if they get their hands on cannabis. But they need it desperately. We can't take a year to get cannabis into the hands of these people that desperately need it. And raw cannabis heals, but don't get you high. You can look it up on the internet. You can look it up in study after studies. Raw cannabis does not affect you psychologically. Okay? You can make a protein smoothie out of cannabis that will heal people that have all kinds of problems. And it's all on the internet. It's all on your cell phones. All you got to do is type in the disease and cannabis. And it'll tell you what they've found. It's not hard to find studies and learn what is the newest stuff on this stuff. But I'm an inventor. I want to help people, but I don't want to be left in the dirt. I don't want my intellectual properties taken from me, but my intellectual property can help people. And Utah should not have exclusive rights on a plant. If you look up patents, no one has exclusive rights on a plant. And for Utah to say only we can grow it is wrong. We would not all be flying today.
Sorry.
It's all right. Put it on my tab. I get extra time. Okay, we wouldn't be flying today, folks, if it wasn't for a couple of bicycle inventors. A couple of guys putting things together that they say just won't work. Okay? But God gave us America, and Americans gives us ingenuity. We can solve all kinds of problems. How to dispense of this product. How to give the product exactly at the right dosage so nobody has too much, because it can make you sick if you have it too much, too fast, when it's been cured. Okay, curing is when it heated to the temperature of 240 degrees. Cannabis is safe till it reaches 240 degrees as far as making you goofy, I guess, or see things in a different light. Because cannabis increases blood flow to the mind. And it's really, you're not really high. What you're doing is seeing things in a whole new light. And when you look at things, sometimes it's a little bit funny how life is that we live today. We all live in a box. We all drive a box. We all eat out of a box. That isn't nature. Cannabis has been with us for 10,000 years or more. It was here before laws were here. It will be here when laws are forgotten. Okay? God gave us cannabis, and nowhere in the Bible, nowhere in script, nowhere does it say he has a recall on it. Okay? It's a safe product. God made it. The devil has nothing to do with it. And I'm here to testify to you guys that we can do this for people. We can give them the best medicine they've ever had that will give them a new lease on life. And that's what we're here for, is to help the patients that even the medical people are throwing out, that's given up on. But they only got 6 months, so we have to hurry. And I'm here to help you guys, if you'll help me get this, okay? We have to have, just time out because he had the thing, okay?
That was your 5 minutes.
Oh, was it? Well, yeah, but he interrupted me, okay?
That was the 5 minutes we were going to.
Okay.
So wrap up, please.
Okay. We need to come up with some way to permit caregivers a way to transport this stuff, a way to make it not a crime for people to raise cannabis for the dying. We need to make it not a crime to serve these dying patients cannabis, even if they live next to a school or a church. There has to be a little bit of give here, okay? If people truly believe that they're giving what they need to these dying people, they'll give them the best. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Fraser McFarlane, and I am a certified registered nurse anesthetist. I have a master's in anesthesia. I handle controlled substances every day that are extremely regulated, but in a different way. I have a couple of concerns. I did make it, send an email to Melissa with a bunch of bullet points, but I'm only going to bring up just a couple. In 2013, there was 24,000 deaths in the United States for opioid overdose. So in 2015, the American Heart Association put new drug onto their algorithm for cardiac arrests. That was naloxone. So the layperson could use naloxone if necessary. There's been certain medical research shown that the use of adjuncts such as THC and CBD reduce the use of opioids up to 84% and up to potentially 41% of those patients stopping opioid use. So when you're talking about terminal illness, it's definitely going to impact that patient population's use of opioids. It's going to be reduced. But having said that, what standards are there in place to guarantee that opioid products, that the dosing in those products is comparable? What I mean by that? If you're providing a transdermal patch that's got 50 milligrams of THC and so much CBD in it, and then you've got a cream that's got 50 milligrams, you've got an ingestible jelly bean that's 50 milligrams, you've got a suppository that's 50 milligrams, and then you've got a some kind of oil suspension you can take. Well, what is going to be the effect, the pharmacological effect for the patient? Well, it depends who did the research on each one of those products. Even research labs themselves, it's been documented, the same product can be sent to six different labs to be tested and analyzed and get six different results, meaning that the labs themselves need to have specific rules and guidelines for how those products are tested. Maybe the state only uses one lab for testing. I don't know. Every drug I use is labeled with a dose, and it's labeled with an expiration date. I think every drug that's dispensed in this dispensary should be labeled. How are patients or physicians going to be able to prescribe a drug when you don't know the dosing? How do you educate physicians on dosing and what they're prescribing? There needs to be some kind of online site or some way to educate physicians on exactly what they're what they have. What are their options to prescribe to patients? If they don't know what their options are and they're not educated in the product, they can't write any scripts. So that's another point. It was documented, last point, and I'll sit down. It was documented in the Journal of International Drug Policy. I'm reading an article this morning. One of the biggest problems in Washington is diversion. Just in my profession alone, 10% report anonymously that they abuse or use. So you got 10% of anesthesia providers abusing and diverting drugs. So what's the diversion rate amongst cannabis growers, processors, and dispensaries? So what do you do to make sure there's limited diversion? And one of the thoughts I had was, one, you license the individual as a grower or the company as a grower, and two, you accredit the facility they're using. That goes for growers and for processors. Why would you do that? If you have a grower that wants to make a little extra cash, they could grow in 4, 5, 6, 7 different places, but only one's known to you. So you license and accredit a facility. And then that just gets into a whole other discussion. What's in the best safety for the public? Are there any fungus spores on the product? Is there any bacteria? How often should a batch be tested? But anyhow, I do know that there's a great, one last thing, research. What kind of constraints do you put on research? There's already been done a lot of research on cannabis and CBD, and there's no doubt that it's pharmaceutically advantageous and useful for patients. You can have chemotherapy cancer patients that could benefit greatly from this drug. Reduce their nausea, increase their quality of living. There's no doubt about that. That research has been done. But when it gets back to dosing, what's the best form? If you have cancer, you're nauseated, what's the best form for you? So inhalation, I think in research, you should not restrict the route of administration. A large portion of anesthetics used to keep people asleep are gases. Inhalational agents. Why? Onset of action is really fast. Duration of action is shorter. And so I believe that for research purposes, you should not restrict it solely to ingestible forms. Let the state and universities and those who want to participate in that kind of research have access. But then it gets back to diversion. You have to go to every person through which the drug goes to make sure there's limited diversion. So it has to be tightly monitored, inventory control. Anyhow, thank you so much for your time. I think it's a wonderful thing, and hopefully, I know a lot of patients will benefit for sure from passing this program.
Thank you very much. Lori O'Dell, Ian, and Alexander. Lori, and then Ian.
I'm going to go on record just as Lori O'Dell, U.S. citizen for this comment, or Utah citizen, not representing companies at this time. So one of my concerns, just in some of the research that I've done and in seeing what other states have done when they've passed their medical marijuana laws, there seems to be a conflict where the patients are allowed to take the medication, they're prescribed the medication, yet they're in fear of being able to go and operate their vehicle later. And by later, I mean even the next day, like 12 hours apart or whatever it may be. From what I've been seeing, there's been kind of a disconnect with that with the law, where people are saying, well, I'm prescribed this, my doctor prescribes me marijuana. A police officer pulls them over and they disclose the fact, yes, I'm prescribed marijuana. They go to the police station, they get a blood test. Well, you have a DUI. So For me, my concern would be making sure that the correct research and testing is done to see what a good tolerance level is for the general, you know, for a large group of people. So you might have someone who is really thin, maybe really active. They might metabolize it quicker than someone who's not very active. So just making sure that when these laws are put in place, that there's that protection that people still feel like they can go out and operate their vehicle, and if they get pulled over, just like with alcohol, that there's some kind of a tolerance, some kind of a legal limit, but that legal limit is tested properly. Because THC is going to stay in your system for much longer than alcohol. You know, alcohol will be gone by the next day once it's worn off. With THC, someone can take their medicine, say, for 2 months or something, and then not take it for a couple of weeks. And even though they haven't taken it for a couple of weeks, it's probably still in their system. So then they would go and get tested and be charged with a DUI if the limits aren't set correctly. So that's just one of my concerns that I wanted to bring up. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ian McAlexander. I'm a PhD organic chemist. I'm now doing a lot of analytical chemistry. I own an analytical services company here in Salt Lake called Terponics. I named it that in anticipation of this event. The ter is for terpenes, the pon is for hydroponics. I was looking down the road. I put together I looked at three states neighboring us, Arizona, Montana, and New Mexico. Each of these states have medical marijuana, but they don't have recreational. And I assume you guys are looking at what those states do. So I compiled some sort of two pages of best of what they're doing. And instead of sending that to you so you could have a copy, I thought I'd just stand up here and say it so you could write it down. If that's helpful.
We appreciate it.
You're welcome. It looks to me like, even though this conversation's about the current bill and the right to try, that of course there's a ballot initiative coming, and that you have to be thinking with parallel tracks, you know, what are we going to do if come November? A lot of it overlaps, though. So what a lot of states have is an application fee and a licensing fee. Often these fees are very, very high, and that's because they want to keep people out of the business. It's my hope that this will be you guys will be pragmatic and not use money as a way to limit business in this area. When we talk about medical marijuana, I see four components of this, which is cultivation, you know, the growing, processing it, manufacturing it into other products like edibles, and then dispensing it. One company could do all that, or it could be broken up into different groups. Or, you know, how many licenses are you going to provide? Are you going to have licenses for these individual things? And then what are your qualifications for licensing? I assume that someone with a felony won't be able to get a license. Most states have something practical like that. Zoning. There's already plenty of zoning laws to look at. I'm sure you're looking at that. How much can a patient possess without becoming a criminal? I think it should be about 4 pounds. Distribution's a real issue. And when we're talking about people who are at the end of their life, this will have to be brought to them. So you'll need couriers, and those couriers will have to have some sort of qualification. What happens if they're pulled over? Obviously, they should be thrown in jail. Cultivation. I have some points on that. Where are the strains going to come from? And that's an interesting problem, but what I've seen is there's kind of a don't ask, don't tell policy. They just magically appear. And then are you going to allow indoor growing, greenhouse growing, or outdoor growing? And is greenhouse growing indoor or outdoor? And you're going to need different security levels of security for those things. Maximum number of plants in a grow operation. Male plants don't count. Just make sure you know that. How much can be stored on site? Well, you get growing plants, you don't get rid of it all at once. How many pounds are you going to have sitting in the back room? If there are multiple grow operations, can they exchange strains? And could there be, this is just, I think it's kind of a neat idea, to be considered a strain bank, somebody that grows strains, they keep the mother plants from flowering, but the cuttings can be sold to the growers. They don't actually produce marijuana, they just keep the mother plants. That could be a different, you know, a facility on its own. If we're talking about the end of life care, whole plant products aren't going to be as interesting. I mean, smoking whole plant or even vaping, it's not as interesting as the edibles. People will need to eat. It's hard to smoke when you're terribly ill. Labeling is going to be very important. And then we get to the laboratory testing that goes along with the labeling. This is where I come in. You'll obviously need THC and CBD content reported on the label. There's two parts to THC. There's THC and THCA. THCA is carboxylic acid that turns into THC when you heat it or eat it. So it's you add those two numbers together. That tells you what the real THC content will be in your body. Plants will need to be tested for microbials and for mycotoxins. People are often concerned about things like pesticides, but really the mycotoxins and microbials are the real danger. There are funguses that can grow on a plant and make you very sick. And then for products that are made from extracts, you'll want solvent residue testing, but that's only if solvents are used for the extraction, whether it's ethanol or butane. There's also another process called supercritical fluid extraction, which is compressed carbon dioxide into a liquid, pseudo-liquid. That's a great method because you don't have any solvent left over. The CO2 evaporates. And then there'll be a compliance and auditing part to it if you have a grow operation. Somebody's got to pop by and make sure there aren't 10,000 plants, that kind of thing. So, hope I didn't make any enemies with this. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mark Newman, Chris Brockton.
I'm representing Chris.
My name's Adam Kelly. I represent a company called Kazon. We're a medical marijuana company out of New Mexico. We also have facilities in Colorado and California. If we looked at the bills that you guys have, not only the bill 197 or 195, but also other bills that are coming up, we have found problems in those bills that you guys are going to run into. It's going to take way over 5 minutes, so just let you know we are here. We would like to sit down with you guys and kind of go through that, help you out in any way we can to.
So what would be helpful is if you can identify what lines in the bill they are and the problems with them so we can take a look at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as we've talked as a department, these medical marijuana bills, industrial hemp bills that have passed, what we have now is not what we'll have in 5 years.
Right.
There are modifications to these every year. So if there are areas that need to change and makes it more difficult for us to implement these bills, and you have specifics, we'd love to have.
Absolutely. And we can send you an email with all those specifics. There's quite a few. That we've seen other states run into issues. They've had to go back, and it's cost a lot of money to fix legislation and whatnot to help that. So if we can make Utah that much better and set the standard for the rest of the states to follow, that would be even best.
Anything specific you want to talk about?
There's a couple on the bill 73, the one that's kind of the main bill that pushes it all. You're going to run issues with people growing their own marijuana facilities.
73.
Yeah, the initial medical marijuana bill.
Okay, so there were four that passed this year.
Right.
The first ones that have passed. So 73 was 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep.
And it did not pass.
Right, but it's come back on the docket in November.
So there's an initiative on the ballot in November.
Right. I'd have to look at back of my notes. The bills are right now getting looked at by some legislation guys that are kind of nitpicking them. So I don't have any specifics here with me now today, but we can send you an email with specifics on things that could help out a lot.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Mark Bittman. I'm probably not a very good public speaker, but that's okay. Everybody keeps talking about labeling and the importance thereof. So what I've done is I actually have labels from a cannabis shop in Nevada that I go to every couple of months because I am a patient, because I'm a migraine sufferer, and I was sick and tired of taking opioids because, like the gentleman said, you just keep taking, and then all of a sudden you forget how many you take it. So now all of a sudden, 8 o'clock at night rolls around, so now you're going to drink a beer and fall asleep and never wake up. In Utah, we're the fourth highest-ranking overdose state in the nation, and that's quite sad. There was 166 heroin overdoses in Utah in 2016, 127 opioid deaths in 2017. There are 600 deaths per year on opioid use. Marijuana, zero. Cannabis, sorry, is zero. You know, when these patients are on their, last 6 months of life, in my opinion, they should be given the best treatment possible to relieve their pain. Some patients don't want to smoke. They don't want to take a pill. If they smoke it, it goes through the liver, and it's not truly the effect, because then if they eat the edibles, it goes to the digestive system and the acid will break it down. So what I would like to see happen first on a trial basis, if we're going to do this, is the patch. The patch is just a little, you've seen them all, it's like a salon box patch. Here's one here. I might go to jail, but that's okay, because I have one here. So with the THC patch, you can regulate how much THC is going in on the patch. That goes directly into the bloodstream. Nothing else. Doesn't go through any part of the body except for the bloodstream. That patch can last between 8 and 12 hours of pain relief for these sufferers. And if we're going to do it, then I say, if we want to start slow, start with the patch. That's the packaging right there. You can get, and I didn't know that Utah was thinking about one dispensary. I think that's an injustice to the people. Like someone said, they have a patient in Blanding. Who wants to drive from Blanding to Salt Lake to get their medicine? I wouldn't. I'd drive in a ski. Because the tax dollars and the dollars themselves make sense to keep it in the state of Utah. I don't know how many people in the audience right now use medical marijuana, but we have to go to other states, and I don't think we should do that. And you all know that there's two types of, I think Utah's talking about the sativa strain, is that right? Probably so, but it's a 10% thing. But, that's all I wanted to say, and I appreciate your listening to me. If you want to review these labels, I'm here. Okay?
Thank you. Okay, Cindy Mondra. Looks good.
Thank you. Nothing so new to say. Not really. You know, as you move forward, he just had the labels and things like this. I know that everyone's really focused on CBD and THC, but there are other molecules in cannabis. By taking the time to understand what these do in the body and how they interact with the food that you eat and those type of things, because this is a garden vegetable. It's kind of like eating your broccoli, you know, important stuff. But it works better if you eat it with a different, you know, there's different combinations of food. Any nutritionist can tell you that. This is something that I feel should be available raw. So if you've got a cancer patient with a brain tumor, let's say, if they eat the flower raw, it ends up what's called Rick Simpson oil out on the market, but it can actually reduce those tumors or reverse them completely. But you'll have to eat it, not smoke it. But that's it, is educate yourselves on the delivery methods that are available. Eating the cannabis and edibles, those type of things, seems to have a lot of therapeutic effect, but I do provide hospice. Some patients can't take anything in orally, so suppositories, things that go under their tongue, vapes, those type of things where you can put a whole mask over their face in their last weeks or days, or hours for that matter. So just, if you could take your time to look at all the different delivery methods. Patients need all of them, actually. So, and as for the difference between hemp and cannabis, again, I will send you a link, but it is a patented cancer killer. It is actually patented by the U.S. government for several different deliveries. We've got Mayo Clinic notes on our website, you know, of how to deliver those to patients, because, you know, they have it in their state already. But so by utilizing the basically 30 other states around us that have this available to their citizens, you guys can really kind of mitigate your educational learning curve on this. So that's what I had to say this time. So thanks for letting me talk again.
Are there any others that would like to make comments?
Hi, my name is Roy. We're living here in Utah. Everyone's here. I was late, so I'm sorry if anything I say has been already said. I'm not going to go into any specifics, but my concern that I'd like to raise is the issue of delivery, and we've been talking about that a lot. And the point that I'd like to address is not all the different ways that we can, you know, administer all the different drugs available in the cannabis plant to the patients that need them, but to address the wording in the law and specifically what the point of this is. And you're opening this up for medical research, right? So with medical research, I believe that it's an exploration process, not a process of allowance. Right? So if the state is going to allow the use of cannabis for medical exploration and for experimental medical purposes, then there shouldn't be a limit on the ways that it can be administered. I do believe that you should regulate, control, and track, and report. And with that, I invite you to be as thorough as you'd like to. I think that any individual that comes to you and wants to win that contract from you, you know, when the meeting said that the department has the right to contract with the third party, it expects to, that third party should be able to give you as much tracking and reporting as you need to keep the citizens of this state and the people that you report to happy and feeling safe, that the advancements that we're making into this drug and what we know about it are being documented. With that, that gives you the ability to better tailor to the people that are in need, right, these patients. With better reporting, that feeling of safety will allow you guys, I believe, to be able to open more than just one location, say in South Lake. Because the idea is control, right? You don't want to limit your people. You just, it's harder to maintain that control if you've got people sailing all over the state. So if you are going to move that way, I suggest that you find a third party. I'm just starting. I've got some partners. We'll reach out to you later. We'd like to set up a system and work with you in a way that makes you feel that all the questions that are being asked are answered for you and for the people. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Chris. So I was just a little more curious as far as your rules and regulations. If patients recover from their terminal illnesses with the use of the medicinal cannabis, is that going to be recorded? And would the Center for Disease Control also be notified? And I'm just kind of surprised they're not here. I didn't notice if you guys mentioned if there was someone from the Center for Disease Control. As far as, sorry, kind of nervous. As far as right now, Utah allowing cannabis to be used for terminal patients, I'd like to recommend that you consider not only terminal patients. I realize that cannabis is used for treatment, but I'd like to make it known that it cured me from anger issues. I brought this notepad to write notes, to get contact information, and then I looked at the back of it. And it reminded me why I want this to be a part of Utah. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Just come on up to the floor, Mike, so we can keep moving.
Hi, my name is Darren Johnson, and I am looking to get into the business side of marijuana. A lot of things I can say, just kind of reiterate what others have said. I agree with Ms. Stankless and the two other gentlemen that said that one state-run dispensary probably isn't enough for those that live in the southern part of the state. The transportation cost would be too much. So I propose that, or recommend that the state looks at getting more than one, maybe three or four state-run dispensaries. They can help out with patients. Some of the things as a business owner I'd like to be able to see in the bills that are coming out or the rules that are generated is the specific number of licenses that will be issued for growers, processors, transportation companies, and laboratory testers. And then I would like also to recommend, as an anesthesiologist, mentioned that we don't limit things to from the inhalation methods. I think that could be beneficial to the patients. And I don't think we should restrict things based off of indica versus sativa strains. I think both should be offered to the patients. And then what I'd like to see in the rules is very strict, or at least very clearly outlined zoning laws, so we know, if we're gonna have a grow or a processing facility, where that can be located and what restrictions are gonna be placed on that. And then also, I'd like to know if Utah's gonna permit outdoor grows versus just indoor, what kind of restrictions are gonna be placed on that.
Hi, my name's John Cooper. I'm probably going to be reiterating a few things as well. There should definitely be a standardization of equipment calibration as far as the testing goes, because I know we would get different results from the same batches depending on which company we sent them to. And I know that some companies, they would never advertise this, but they would bump up your results a little bit if you would, you know, pay a higher fee per test, which is really unethical, and frankly, does a disservice to the patients who buy that product at the end. I would suggest that as the public commenting for this ends and you guys implement the rules, that importing the oils and these products from out of state would probably be a really good idea. I know my dad probably has about 6 months left, and I know that if he has to wait for plants to be put in the ground and harvested and then processed, he's probably not going to be around to benefit from this law rolling out. So I think that importing it would be a very, very good thing for people who need it and who are suffering. And yeah, if courier services aren't a realistic option, one dispensary is not going to work. And I don't know if one per county is realistic, or, you know, maybe basing it off geographic areas based on population, you know, every 100,000 people or what have you. I think patients should be able to grow their own plants. I don't know how realistic that is with the wording of these bills, but, you know, maybe keeping it indoors in a locked location might be an option. I really liked what the last gentleman said about zoning restrictions, so that, you know, people who are actually looking to start their own businesses can be, you know, looking for places that they can set them up so that they know where they can and cannot put these businesses. And then research was discussed. I think that it should be funded from the state, because most science research is funded through federal grants, and you can't get federal grants for a Schedule I drug without jumping through all sorts of hoops. So thank you.
Hello, thank you again for having us up here and for letting us speak to you and for you guys listening to us. My name is Nick Morgan. I am here with some of my representatives. We talked to them up here earlier. We're at a local business here in Utah Garden Supply Store. We specialize in indoor gardening, hydroponics, organic gardening, aquaponics. This is something that's a little bit interesting to us, not something that we're involved in personally, but within the industry, we have very close contacts who are in medical cannabis production, extraction, everything like that. So we would just like to kind of offer our services that we can provide. We can do operational costs, equipment costs, yield potentials, things like that. I'm not sure if that's been discussed before, but that's something that we can do. And kind of one of the things that Johnny came up here and talked about, and I'd like to reiterate, is the involvement of the local businesses and the local citizens in what's going on in this undertaking. We've had a lot of people come in talking about their production facilities out of state, and what's worked for them. And I think it's very important to look at those other states for inspiration, but also to see what we can do to make things better as well. Utah is a very unique place, and I think the solutions to our problems need to be unique as well to serve our population correctly. So we just want to make sure that local is involved as much as possible. Saying that, though, I do understand that access to medicine is very important. So I think in the short term, maybe it is looked into to bringing in medical products from other places, but in the long term, it's something that we should focus on, very local heavy industry. And one of the other things that I just kind of had a question on was on line 71 of the bill, it talks about the department contracting with a private entity, and I just wondered if that was private entity or private entities plural. If it's just going to be a single producer or multiple producers. And kind of what effect that would have on crop quality. That's kind of one of the things. If you put all your eggs in one basket, you're going to have somebody producing all the medicine for the state. What if something goes wrong? What if it's found the pesticides you're using, or fungicides, or the medicine doesn't up to the quality that the patients need? Then it kind of goes into a whole, you know, you have to go through a whole another harvest cycle to be able to produce medicine that you need. So just kind of taking into account, you know, having all your eggs in one basket, kind of diversifying the type of medicine that people are growing. There's different strains, different varieties that are good for different ailments. So, you know, being able to have that selection as well for the patients is and that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Hi. I'm Eileen Green, and I've done a great deal of research because of being a cancer survivor myself and having a lot of people in my family who have we've lost to cancer. I've done a lot of research on cannabinoids and their ability to fight cancer, and I realize that this is about people who are either on hospice or, you know, who've basically been they're being considered as being terminally ill, and I understand that's the focus. That being said, it is important to note that if you've heard of things like people using cannabis oil to actually fight cancer, you can go on National Institute of Health, you can look this sort of thing up. Just look at the studies that have been done in petri dishes and things like that. You can also read about anecdotal things where there's a lot of word of mouth, things like Rick Simpson oil, which you could research in regards to it's a good thing to be aware of. So you guys could look that up. But that being said, and knowing that the focus of this is about terminally ill people, I have known and heard of a lot of terminally ill people who've had stage 4 cancer, and they've been able to have a substantial impact either on increasing their lifespan or had the cancer go into remission because of cannabis oil. So what I'm hoping is with this, with these people in mind, if we can keep track of the cannabinoid content, if we can keep track of the terpene, if possible, look at terpenes, look at cannabinoid contents, look at whether it's sativa or whether it's indica. Sativa tends to be more energizing, and indica tends to be more relaxing. So that's something to know and to be conscious about when looking at delivering this to terminally ill people. I'm going to put more words together and get more of this out to you guys in email. And I did a lot of preparation for the CBD one, but I didn't do as much for this one. But I'm going to send you guys some follow-up thoughts on this. But I'm hoping that there might be a way. I don't know if this is something you guys would participate in or not, but if we find that someone is given cannabis oil and it does end up extending their life past the 6 months, that there could be some way to kind of document that and research that for the sake of people in the future that might be dealing with the same thing. So I don't know how much research, I haven't found out how much research is a part of this, or it's just mainly being looked at as caring for people's quality of life in the end of their life. And both of those are super important issues. A couple other quick things. As far as safety and things like that are concerned, I'm very behind limiting pesticides as much as possible, especially in relationship to taking a holistic approach or just, you know, dealing with terminally ill things. it would be very ideal if you guys could find a place, if there is just going to be one place, if you could find a place that does limit the amount of pesticides used as much as possible. And I know there's some other concerns, and I appreciate the other concerns, and I'm not as familiar with those concerns, like molds and things like that. I'm not an expert on that sort of thing. And that would be something to take into consideration, too. It would be good to get, you know, to have a record of what the different cannabinoids are. And I also hope that delivery methods can be, I'm very behind delivery methods being, there being a range of them. Because my dad had passed from pancreatic cancer. He could not, he was interested, this was about 3.5 years ago, he was very interested in trying cannabis oil. All he was able to do was Marinol, which did help him with his symptoms. But I know that he was interested in trying something other than that. That being said, the oils ingesting them are very important, but there are people who can't digest anything. They just can't swallow things. So vaping, making oils available for vaping, smoking's something a lot of people don't like to do. Some people do. But I don't know if you guys are going to touch on delivery methods, if that's going to be your department or not. But I do think that having a range of those would be important to meet the needs of people who can't actually digest things. And safe extraction methods is another thing, too. Testing for solvents, like it's been mentioned before, would be very good. And also being aware of different extraction methods. There's ethanol extraction and there's CO2 extraction. They're both considered as much cleaner than using solvents. So I would really hope that you guys could, when this gets going, you guys could find people that use the safe extraction methods as possible or clean extraction methods. That's one thing that isn't always done. And I think it's very important, especially in the considering that people could potentially get better. I'll try to wrap this up here. Information on terpene content and the ability to research the THCA, which comes from mainly people obtain that through juicing. It's been said that's non-psychoactive, and that's something that I don't know how this is all going to play out, but I'm hoping that I understand it won't allow people to grow and process cannabis on their own, but I'm hoping that this won't get in the way of research into THCA, which has to be obtained through juicing or some other method of non-heated. Where the plant is not heated. And that has nutritional value, and it's non-psychoactive. But this isn't really about that too much, so I'm kind of putting a lot of different things together. I'm going to send you guys some more information and some thoughts targeted towards this, as well as the CBD ones that I missed earlier. And I really appreciate you guys, your interest. Thank you. Okay.
How are you guys doing?
Thank
you. My name is Gino. Most likely I have experience to share with all of you. From 2015, I've been having surgeries. Started my elbow, coaching my shoulders, two in my back. Recently, 2 months ago, neck. I dropped from 4 oxycontins a day to 1 pill a normal day, thanks to some lotions and oils. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bart.
Hi guys. Again, my name is Zane Morrison, and I was just going to say again that cannabis is medically beneficial in all forms. CBD is beneficial, but THC also. this talk of indica and sativa, I think in years to come, those two words will become insignificant. Really what matters is what molecules in certain percentages are in each plant. CBD, THC, CBG. So there's many different molecules and many different strains. I think we need to definitely test all types, as well as routes of exposure. You can smoke, you can use lotions. I think all are viable. I would like the state to take a look at each one. I think that with regulation from seed to sale, licensing, labeling, batch tracking, third-party testing, we can make all of these forms safe for everybody. And I just want to tell you guys, as a business owner, I know myself and many other people in town, we're ready to develop a completely translucent relationship and just work together with the state and see if we can find something that works for everybody. I'll write down my information and you guys can reach out to us. Anything we can do to help. Again, there's people in this room and a lot of us that know people who need cannabis now. So one thing I was going to say, maybe import until we can provide. That's something we could think about if it's possible. I think in years to come, this progress will be made all across the country. And it'll be something that's no longer a state. We've got a lot of room to go, and I think we'll get there. So let's just keep communication open and work together. Anything you guys need, let us know. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Brady Tracy. I have some questions and comments about the federal government being illegal still. If we import certain strains from other states, wouldn't that attract attention to the DEA? We wouldn't want our couriers necessarily getting stopped by the DEA. And then if we keep it in state, would you like you to think about how we'd paid for it in taxes to the IRS? The IRS has been doing raids all across the country and states on grow operations because they can't officially pay for it to the IRS. Nor will banks give out business loans for anybody that wants to become a grower and start their own business because it's still technically considered illegal by the IRS and DEA and many other agencies that will come down upon them. And another thing to think about is if you guys do support growers, third-party grower, or even your own grower in-house, state-owned, how will the state defend them against the IRS and the DEA? Because the Attorney General does not like marijuana right now. So that's some things to consider. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. I've met you guys twice already today, so I'll save you from the long intro. But listening to all these comments gave me a lot of things to think about. And one of the things that keeps coming up, listening to all these comments gave me a lot of good things to think about. My largest concern, the way I read the bill, is that medical cannabis is only legal for those who are terminally ill in the state of Utah, right? So I'm an experienced grower. I grew over 100,000 pounds of flower last year in California alone on 25 plus farms, and I have 60,000 square feet of indoor grow in California. And I know the metrics, the economics of, you know, of what it costs to produce a unit of X THC. I would suspect, you know, an educated guess here is that I could grow enough medical cannabis in half of this room that would probably supply the demand for terminally ill patients. And I look at everybody here in the audience, and I'm guessing that everybody here would like to grow. And at the end of the day, it's probably not possible. So my questions to you is, or my challenge to you all would be, is how are you going to come up with a system that the permitting system that basically, you know, extends permits to those? Is it going to be based on a point system, you know, based on experience and capitalization, who knows what? But I foresee that being a problem because there's probably so many people who want to grow. Now, the way the bill reads as well is it's not permissible to use flower for smoking, right? The flower has to be processed in some shape or form. So again, going back to my experiences, I could grow enough cannabis in half of this room. In the other room, I would have all my extraction equipment, and I wouldn't need a very big setup to extract or process all of that cannabis, right? I mean, so what I would look for, what I would hope to see, is some kind of documentation or data on how many patients are actually terminally ill in Utah, and that would give us a good starting point about how many square footage we actually need to grow and plan for, and so on and so on. So those are some of the things I see, and I hope, I'm sure you guys have thought far ahead of this and on these things, but it would be interesting to actually see how many patients were terminally ill, and of those, you know, maybe 5%, 10% would actually be open to using cannabis in the first year. I'm sure that would grow over time, but those are some of the complications I see. It's a very expensive operation, you know, a couple million in, you know, grow lights and all the different materials that go into that, even in a small room like this, plus the extraction equipment is at least that much too. So it's a capital intensive endeavor. And so if there's anything I'm trying to do with you guys, these are the economics that I think about as far as like what is this going to look like, right? I mean, because we're going to have so many people here who want to participate, rightfully so, and they should. We all should. But my fear is there's just not going to be enough to go around. So I would challenge you guys to be thinking about that and develop a plan on how to proceed. So thanks.
If there are no other comments,
I have a short one. So
okay, come on up.
I know I've already spoken. Sorry.
John Cooper again. Some sort of payment system needs to be set up, like a credit union or something, because this can't be a cash-based business, because people will either, you know, stash it or do under-the-table deals where they're not paying taxes on it, or what we ran into in California is we would get followed when we were doing drop-offs, and we had multiple employees get robbed at gunpoint. So figuring out a payment system is definitely a very important aspect to this. Thank you.
My name is Rebecca. Thank you for sitting here in your office. I just wanted to go back to the one guy was saying there's about four aspects to it, the growers, the processors, manufacturers, everything. My viewpoint on it, there's going to be people who want to process it. There's going to be people who want to sell it, to grow it. You should have separate business licenses for all of those. Not everyone is going to want to grow in half of this room and then process it as well. Some people are only going to want to grow. With that being said, yes, zoning is a big thing. I'm from Utah County. The zoning there is horrendous. So keep that in mind. Yeah, you can zone up the wazoo. It's really going to hurt in the long run, too. Because, yes, this is the first bill that's going to pass. Or that has passed anyways, technically. But you have to also lay the groundwork for anything else that's going to come out and make it easier for yourself in the future as well. So if you have zoning where it's a little bit wider than just, you know, one or two zones, it's going to make it easier in the future as well. There was probably something else that I was going to say, but I don't remember right now. So thank you for your time. Great job.
Thank you all for your comments. We will wrap up. Just a reminder, if you have additional comments, please email them to us. agriculture@utah.gov is the email address. This is just the first in many opportunities that you'll get to comment on these issues. Once we have draft rules, there will be multiple public comments to talk specifically to those rules and opportunity to suggest modifications to those. So thank you for your participation. This is a public process. We want to take as much input as we can from you, and we appreciate your attendance. Thank you.